The Westwood One Podcast Network.
Fear's either going to lock you up or it's going to tighten you up. I'm not saying going out and do ridiculous shit every day, but it's good to do stuff that scares you. Because if it scares you, that means it's just a tiny bit past what your comfort level is. And that's how you build resilience. You just get out of your comfort level a little bit.
Never Quit Radio. All right, everybody, welcome back to the TNQ Podcast. I'm your host, Marcus Luttrell. Every week, it's my job to fire you up, to ignite the legend inside of you, and to push you to your greatness. Join me every week as I take you into my briefing room with some of the most hard-charging people on the planet. They're going to show you how to embrace the suck of life, teach you the values of working your ass off, and charge through whatever life throws at you. This is the Team Never Quit Podcast. So buckle up, Buttercup.
The Team Never Quit podcast is sponsored by Navy Federal Credit Union. Whether you have a short or long-term savings goal, you can keep your money organized with a certificate from Navy Federal Credit Union and focus on the big picture, saving money. Learn more at NavyFederal.org/save. Federally insured by NCUA. Welcome back to another episode of the Team Never Quit podcast. My name's Andrew Brockenbush. I'm the producer of the show. I'm joined by Marcus and Morgan Luttrell, and we're here to do this thing, inspire you guys with some amazing, incredible stories. Today, we've got Mike Day on the show, whose story is crazy.
Compelling. Out of this world. Yeah. It's one of those ones like, there's no way that really happened.
Oh, yeah. Over time? That'll be one of the no way stories.
Yeah. And he's still just like out there doing his thing. No problem.
He tell you that wasn't a big of a deal.
Yeah, like that wasn't a, yeah.
I remember when I got shot 27 times. Yeah, no big deal.
No big deal.
Matter of fact, I walked it off. Yeah, it hurt.
I remember when he got shot 27 times and I had anxiety for him. So don't worry about it, Mikey. We covered down on you.
We got you. Since you don't feel bad about it, we do.
It's all relative. I remember him taking care of me. He was like, man, how you doing? How am I doing? Seriously?
I just told you, man, like I'm a little upset about you getting shot 27 times.
Lord.
I'm getting anxiety just talking to you, trying to talk to me to take care of me, thinking about the injuries you have.
That guy. Well, before we get into that interview, let's get into something we do every single week. We have listener stories, and this week our listener story is called Never Out of the Fight, and the author is Nathan.
I have only recently started listening to the podcast, but it has inspired me to share what I've been through. I grew up in a family that had someone in each generation serve in the military. So at 18, I decided to join the Pennsylvania Army National Guard. I deployed to Afghanistan in 2010, and volunteering for that was the thing that changed my life. When I returned home, I went down a bad path. I started drinking every day, literally isolating myself. There were so many times between 2010 and 2016 that I just wanted to give up and not go on, carrying so much guilt and shame that it was literally tearing me apart. I got out of the Army, had a good job, yet it wasn't good enough. That's when the drugs became attractive. I finally found something that filled the void. After getting into some legal trouble in 2015, I tried getting sober. The consequences were still not bad enough. I ended up trying to kill myself in 2016 by swallowing 30 pills. I woke up 2 days later with my mom sitting beside me, saying, I didn't know what to do. I finally put drugs and alcohol down in 2016 and have not picked anything up since. And I live by something I heard, never out of the fight. I'm finally able to look myself in the mirror and be comfortable in my own skin. And in the little time I've been listening to the TNQ podcast, you guys have made a huge impact on my life. And I am now working to pass along the message of never out of the fight to people like myself who thought drugs and alcohol are the solution. Thank you guys for all you have done. Nathan, that's an amazing story. Thanks for reaching out. And like so many others that travel down the path and think that drugs and alcohol and, you know, self-medication is the way to run away from pain and suffering and anguish, that's just not the case. And the fact that you're out there spreading the word as not only someone who's walked through the fire, which speaks volumes, you know, because there's always that thing about relatability. How am I supposed to understand and listen to somebody who hasn't struggled like I've struggled? So you putting that out from a user experience speaks volumes to them And it speaks volumes about you. So God bless you. And thank you for listening. And God bless you.
Yeah, brother. Those lessons that we learned going through all this, I mean, they're kind of there for a reason. When we step into the fire, and no matter what anybody tells you, the alcohol and the drugs, they're not the solution. They can be a part of it. They can help. They're in mundane times. You want to dull a little bit, but ultimately what they do is they just prolong the inevitable, and that's you're going to have to deal with whatever it is that it's covering up. And when we go through these hard times, the back end of that, when those emotions and all that stuff's reeling through you, that's you learning and changing and kind of adapting to what you just went through. It's the body changing, and that's how you go from an opinion to your perspective, and you see things differently. It's a natural part of it. All of that is to understand that, to understand what's happening to your body as you go through those serious physical and emotional experiences. And a lot of times people don't want to talk about that with each other. So instead of talking about it, we just kind of dull it out. Because when you take when you drink or when you take the pills, it just makes that go away. But then when that stuff wears off, there it is, staring at you right in the face. And it's not an overnight deal. Some of these traumas that a lot of people go through, they take time to heal. And the best way to do that is around our family and our friends and talk about it and let them talk to you about it. Tell you what they see and tell them what you're thinking. And there's no shame in that. Opening your mouth and talking about whatever's on your mind and being open to the response. That's the biggest thing. A lot of times when we talk, what we hear back is not exactly what we want to hear. So we just kind of cover up. But that's actually the most beneficial thing about having the people around us is when they're trying to tell us something and help us, it's to open up our ears and our heart and close our mouth and listen, man. And you're a shining example of that never out of the fight. Thank you for writing in, brother, and keep doing what you're doing, spreading the word. That's what it's all about. God bless you, man. If there's one thing I've learned, it's that sharing your story is a powerful thing. There are people out there that need a kick in the ass, and your story could be the one thing to change their lives forever. So why don't you take a minute to share your story at teamneverquit.com/podcast. Just click on the Share Your Story button in the menu so we can encourage you along the way, and your story just might be shared on one of our upcoming episodes.
All right, boys, it's that time again for another Patreon question of the day. And this one's coming to you from Rebecca Fisher. She asks you guys, what is your favorite trick you played on your brother when you were young?
All right, so.
You can tell the
bed?
Yeah.
That's what I'm
on. Okay, yeah. That's probably the all time. Absolutely the greatest one. I was on the receiving end.
Okay, you were the receiving
end. I was on the receiving
end.
So Marcus.
Yeah, normally.
Absolutely.
I mean, we have some good ones. Have you ever burned anybody with a cold iron?
Nope.
Oh, we used to do that to each other. Iron in your shirts before we go out, and somebody walked by with the iron wouldn't be plugged in, and you just hit him in the chest with it.
Oh.
Just the reaction is priceless.
But you got to act like you're ironing somebody walking like by.
Because they would walk up, we start talking smack, so they would stop, right? And then we'd get to the point, like, hey, you better walk home. I'm gonna hit you with this iron, and be like, whatever, and then just smash it with it.
They freak out.
Oh yeah,
think it's hot.
Put some hot water on it, so it's just the natural. It's hilarious. But anyways, it was after school. I think we were juniors or something in high school. And when you went up the stairs at the end, right off the stairs, if you went straight, that was my bedroom. And then if you went left, our bathroom was there. Morgan and I shared a bathroom. And then Morgan's room was on the left, right? Well, he had this waterbed. Full motion.
Full motion. Back in the old days, full motion, right?
Full motion waterbed. And he was in the shower. So I knock on the door for something, man. And he's like, now says something to me. I'm like, all right, whatever. So I go, his bed's still made. I get in and I crawl underneath the pillows. And I'm laying on my back. My hands are above my head. And my
King size waterbed.
Okay. And remember, I'm a little bitty back in the day. So I fit inside that thing. And my legs and my arms, even extended, I wasn't even hanging outside the railing. So I'm laying there, man. And it's got a headboard with like cubby holes and stuff. And I hear him in there, man. He's getting dressed. He turns the light off. And he turns the covers back. He lays down. I mean, lights off, lays down.
I'm going to bed.
You're going to bed.
And I mean, I'm kind of laughing, dude. I can't believe he didn't hear me, man. And I lay there for a while.
I mean, I get comfy, right? And it's dark and quiet. It's still kind of got that squat.
It's a full motion waterbed, right?
Just moving.
Yeah. You can hear him, the water slash against the sides.
And then I take a deep breath, and I used to be able to scream as loud, like bloody murder, blood scream. Curling, this high pitched before my voice came, scream, right? And I did a crunch, dude, and pulled my hands up over with the pillows and covered him up, and was like, "Ah, oh, damn! I thought Freddy Krueger had me, man!" I screamed.
I could not get it. Full motion water, man.
Dude, trying to get up, like trying to fight in water, dude. And I got a hold of it, man.
And he had a hold of my head. God Almighty!
I'm almost just pissed myself. I scared me to death,
dude.
And I could not get loose. I had no idea what was going on.
Still didn't know. When he bucked, dude, that sent all that water over to the headboard, and I come over the top of him, and then it would go to the end of the bed. And then, yeah, it's like a tidal wave. I was wrestling around in that thing, dude.
Oh, my God. I was like,
funniest, dude.
Oh, to this day, that is the all-time.
How's it going, man?
Yeah. Literally, he got me.
Oh, my.
We still laugh about that every time we talk about
it. Yeah, yeah. There's another time with a buddy of ours, Tanner, and we were in college this time, and we was showering up, fixing to go out. We showed up to his apartment. His roommate was like, "Where's Tanner?" We knock on the door, and he kind of mouths off. So we jump in his closet, right? We kind of you hear him getting out of the shower, and he comes over and he opens the bedroom door and he's yelling into the living room where he thinks we're at. Like, "Who's talking shit? That cool, you know, all this."
Yeah.
He comes over, hand of God's we did. So me and his buddy are looking at each other, right? And Tanner, he takes his towel off, standing naked, throws it up over his shoulder, and he's like, literally, he's flipping the shirts across.
Yeah.
And he goes, "What am I going to run the women in tonight?" You know, he's talking to himself, dude. And we reached out and grabbed his arms, and he fell down, leg up, like an old dog trying to lick his butt, you know, balls hanging down, dude. And he no!
Oh man, that's another legendary story. Because if you guys knew Tanner, God, he should be on this show.
In Hawaii, dude, when you came running down the hallway.
Yeah, that was pretty epic too. But,
I'd just gotten home off a training trip, and Morgan and I lived in this condo, high rise condo. It was like four stories, right? And get off the elevator, and he was home. I'd been gone. Well, the trash chute was at the other end of the hallway. And I got my bag. I'm trying to get the key.
Literally, like, the hallway's like 100 yards long. Seriously, 100 yards.
Wow.
And I'm not looking, dude. And all of a sudden, I hear this.
Dude, I come. So he's trying to open the door. And the doors aren't on the hallway. You have to, like, step into a little niche, right? Yeah. So, like, his
like door frame.
He can't see me coming down the hallway. And as I start, I get about 50 yards from him. And I'm in a dead sprint.
I mean...
And I mean, I started screaming. And man, he dropped to a knee. Oh my God! Had all the bags, dropped all his bags.
I was trying to get in that door frame, dude. I couldn't get in the door. And I was like, "Whoa, here we go."
Do you guys think y'all could still be scared that much today if somebody did something like that to you?
Sure.
Man, I was the other day. So back before I was married, I lived in this little, right when I got in the military, I stayed in this cabin. It was a little cowboy cabin. Like, I was sleeping in one of these chairs like this for the longest time before I met Melanie.
Oh, is this a horse story?
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus.
And when my mom's cat, she had a log cabin right, it was a gap between them, probably about 40, 30 feet maybe. Well, it's pitch black, no moon, no nothing. And I walk out in the middle of the night, 3 a.m. I walk into her house to get something to eat. So I turn the lights on. So my night vision goes away. Well, I hear something hit outside of the house, and I come walking out, man, and I can't see anything, dude. I turn the lights off with my vision, and I run into something, and it hits me, and I fall back on the ground, and then this, whatever it was, hit the ground, and it gets up and hauls ass.
But literally de-cleats him.
Yeah, like, takes me down.
Off his feet.
Boom, off my back. I couldn't see anything, like a ghost, something hit me, dude.
Bigfoot.
Yeah, I just got out of the SEAL teams, man. We lived out in the middle of nowhere too, right? And I go get my gun and flashlight and walk around. We had this old mare my mom would let walk around, old, so old that she'd be standing up, she'd have a heart attack, fall over, hit the ground, and start her heart again. She'd get back up. All right. So she was sleeping, she fell asleep and passed out and fell against the house. She was leaning against the house when I heard it hit the outside of the house. Yeah, she was sleeping again. And when I walk in, I woke her up and scared her. And she kicked me backwards, and I hit the ground, dude.
He walked right into her butt.
Right into her butt.
And she kind of nudged.
Dude, knocked me back. Couldn't. Tripped over the steps. And there's a dog. We have a dog here that looks, it looks like a black bear. It's about the size of a black bear. I mean, it's 100 and...
Oh, you're talking about Drago?
Drago, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And big old black fur.
He looks like a baby brown black bear.
He looks like a baby black bear. And he runs like one, too. Because when he's running, his butt comes around and he's...
kind of hops.
Well, every now and again, and this happened to Mojo.
Oh, yeah.
It happened to me, and then he comes in the house a few weeks later. He's like, hey, man, I don't know if anybody's had this happen to him, but I was out there putting the trash out, and all of a sudden I hear something. I look over behind me, and there's a black bear running
that
at me.
That little bastard come running around the truck.
You did not.
Out of darkness.
I had no idea they had a dog like this. Dude, I dropped down into a karate stance. Like, I don't know what that's going to do to a bear, but he had me, man, and nobody was out there but me, luckily. Come on! Come on!
He's just like, what?
Oh, what's he's up? Just a puppy.
What's up? You
know, he's just a puppy.
Because he jumps up like a bear. He does. And he's like, dude.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah, it scared the hell out of me, though. Not as bad as that water bed, but it scared the piss
out
of me.
Oh, my gosh. Rebecca, I think that plenty answers your question. Thanks for
asking
that to us. Going down that.
And if you want to ever ask a question like that, you know, feel free to, you know, join us on Patreon where you get access to these Patreon questions of the day. If you want exclusive access to the show and bonus behind the scenes content, you're going to head over to patreon.com/teamneverquit. And that's where we're going to have bonus photos. Like this couple weeks ago, we posted a bonus episode of Dan Luna's wife, Leslie Luna. We posted a photo of Aaron Kendall's hand. There's a lot of really cool bonus content over on Patreon. So join us. patreon.com/teamneverquit.
Yeah, it's not a Halloween prop. It's actually Kendall's
It's a real hand.
So check it out. My brother and I used to have this. We still do it to each other every now and again, but when we were younger, it was worse. So we're walking down, in college especially, we're walking down the hallway, like the history building, and it'll be a Coke machine or a little elevator niche or something like
hallway.
That. But and somebody in front of us. If you're not paying attention, man, I'm going to step back and be like, hey, crazy old bastard, and like jump behind the Coke machine. And you're the only one standing there. And they turn around and look at you like, what'd you call me? I mean, it's not a scare tactic, but...
It gets a little bit more...
Dude.
Articulate.
Yeah. And it gets a little more flavorful.
Flavorful.
You need your imagination.
Hey!
Oh, dude. That time in the history building, you got
me.
Oh,
that was excellent, dude.
That was excellent. All right, brother. Like we said, man, a lot of times... And most of the time, people come here to hear these outstanding stories from all of our guests. And when we have one of our own, when we have team guys on here, man, it resonates even harder because it's how personal it is to all of us. So as we're going through this, man, if you would, this is basically like an introduction to you, to all of our listeners, and kind of how you've walked through your life, because it's an amazing journey. Like Mojo said, it's either your greatest never quit story or a bunch of never quit stories. And with you, it's a day-to-day thing. So when you're saying you don't have advice for anybody, man, just living your life and the way you do it is advice enough. So if you don't mind, brother, tell us some of it.
Yeah, that's great. Well, I humbly submit myself as an example because I'm definitely not somebody who needs to be giving advice. I'll get you in trouble. But I guess we'll tell the war story. I mean, the Luttrells are... got a bunch of great war stories, and that's pretty much why, I mean, the only reason anybody knows me is because I got shot so many times. So I guess we'll talk about that. I mean, at one point in there, I quit for a brief second. I was like, maybe I can play possum and they'll just go away. and I realized that wasn't going to happen. And then I got really mad and I went back to work. It is an amazing war story. And you mean, shit, I was there and I don't believe it. I almost can't even trust my own memories. And I believe I can remember the whole thing, except for the point when I was knocked out by the grenade blast.
All right. That's the craziest thing, because I don't mean to interrupt, man, but I couldn't believe it either. We were there, but we were in theater when that went down, just hearing the report of how that went down. So just to get a timeline going, this was in 2007. And we were, those of us, we were stationed in Iraq. Mojo and I were in Ramadi, and were you in Habaniya?
No, I was in Fallujah.
Fallujah, that's right.
But you know what? I remember running into Marcus because it was after he got all banged up and he actually came back on deployment.
Yep.
And we were dropping guys off. I'd been there for like maybe a week and a half, 2 weeks, and we were dropping off the guys we were turning over with. We got IUD'd twice on the way to the airport, and I think it was a team five dude, man. He got through the whole deployment unscathed. A big ass piece of shrapnel cut through the 113 and keyholed him right through the side of his body armor. Just missed all the body armor, and he got his Purple Heart on the way out the door.
That's probably the hard, that deployment as far as team guys, and you want to go in and get in the theater and do something. That 06-07 deployment was unbelievable. I mean, we had 18 guys that we walked out there with. 14 of them got wounded while we were out. And we ripped Team 3. So Chris Kyle, Mark Lee, and all those guys, those were the ones that were in there before us. And then we came in after. And then a turnover out, which is basically what happens, is there's a platoon that's in country for a while running operations. And then when the new one comes in to relieve them, it's called turnover. So we actually integrate a little bit for a week or two or however many days we need to kind of get their battle rhythm going. So usually, to explain this a little bit better, that when most platoons or units take their hit, it's probably going to be in the first part or in the last part. Because in the first part, they're still trying to get their battle rhythm. And at the last part, they're ready to go home, right? So they're not really, it's a funny paradigm shift, if you will, just in the mind.
Well, it's weird.
Yeah, it is.
It's like weird quantum physics, because mine was a turnover op. We were turning over with, and a lot of people might know who Jay Redmond is. He was the OIC of one of the platoons in that task unit that was coming out, or troop that was coming out, and they replaced us. And then Jay got all messed up.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You guys were out west. Marcus was out west in Ramadi area when I was in Fallujah, and shit. I mean, there's another person, Jocko. I think Jocko was the
PU
commander.
That's right. Mm-hmm. He was,
out there. But I mean, we were doing a whole lot of different things. You guys were doing like daytime patrols and stuff like that. I wasn't doing that. I was making sure people were asleep before I went after them. It was a lot safer.
Apparently not.
Yeah, right. All right. So what, basic gist on the operation, what were you guys going out there to do?
A lot of crazy things about it. And I actually got it in the book too, but you know, a guy in my platoon, one of the officers was at the academy with one of the women that was one of the pilots that got shot down by the Al-Qaeda cell that we were going after. They had shot down 4 helicopters. But that was like a crazy connection. You know, that woman lived across the hall from him at the academy. And she was one of the pilots of the 4 helicopters that we knew of that they had shot down. So that's why we were going after them, because they were just shooting birds out of the sky.
Mm-hmm.
And they all happened to be from the same squadron. It was a medevac. It was a medevac squadron, which is, for people listening, they're just a bunch of doctors and stuff. We're not the pilots. They come in and they get us when we get banged up, and they fly us to the hospital to save us. Usually not very well armed, but this particular group had shot down 4, so that's why we went after them. We did a vehicle borne about 3 nights prior to the actual event when I got all shot up, and we got IED'd on the way in, and the only way I can explain is that the trigger expired, it evaporated. We knew after we hit that IED, the reason why we were going after them went away. So we couldn't do anything other than come back, and then we got a helicopter and came back 3 nights later to the same target. And so we patrolled in. We got dropped off a few kilometers away, patrolled in. It was like a wine vineyard. There was grapes. It was weird. In Iraq, I didn't even know they grew grapes in Iraq.
Right. You guys were out away from town, right?
Yeah. So Fallujah, the city, is not actually where Camp Fallujah is. Camp Fallujah is actually out of the city. And we were northeast. This actual operation was northeast of Fallujah. And ironically, the name of the city was Karma, Al Karma. So we went in there, and we had a pattern of life, and we knew we had to hit what we wanted to do was hit 5 different structures in close proximity. And on our foot approach, over at Assets told us, hey, people are jabbering down there. We can't tell if they know you're there or this operation over here. Because when you're out there, I'm sure Afghanistan was different. Everything was a little bit more spread out. But when we went out, there might be 3 different operations, 4 different operations going on. and all utilizing kind of the same assets, or at least sharing some of them. And they told us that they knew we were there. So we decided, well, we'll just hit the primary one, the one that has the highest hits on pattern alignment. And that's what we did. You know, standard SEAL team operations. I mean, a DA is a DA. CQC, it's flow. We just got up there. We did what we did so many times before, thousands of times before. And I went up going into a room with four dudes that I think we woke up just, you know, maybe 15 seconds earlier, and they just beat me to the trigger.
Now, just to give a little more detail, how many guys were y'all running in there with?
Okay, so again, this is a turnover. There was 22 of us, and we had to thin out a lot more things when we did heliborne operations.
Right.
It was actually easy to do the vehicle ones, but it was safer to fly around in a helicopter. But honestly, and you guys know this, the worst part about being over there is not actually doing the op. It's getting to and from.
Mm-hmm.
That's where you get all messed up.
Yeah. So did you guys do an explosive entry? Or did you go in quiet?
That was something that that we learned early on. We blew a lot of shit up when we first got there.
Right.
I mean, we all carried slap charges on our legs. We were all breachers. It's a little bit different now. Everybody was blowing shit up.
Mm-hmm.
And that just draws fire. It's amazing. It's amazing how many doors, if you just try to turn the doorknob, how many of them are actually open.
Hey, what's the fun in that?
But on this one, we the breach team went up and Clark went up. Clark was the lead breacher on this op, amongst a lot of other things. He got killed on this operation. And they breached the door. And, you know, people take things for granted. I mean, they come into a house in the United States, a door in a room means something. It means it goes somewhere else. When you go into a room in Afghanistan or Iraq, it might not go anywhere else. So that's what we had. And I was the MSD guy in case they had to go explosive, because we tried to stay quiet. When you blow stuff up, like I said, people wake up and they want to start shooting at you. The neighbors, it's like a block party.
Right. It's like a ringing a doorbell in everybody's house.
Yeah. Yeah. They all wake up and everybody wants to see what's going on. And some of them have AK-47s. That's like everybody. It's pretty amazing what they had been conditioned to. You know, like my first deployment to Iraq, I thought the barking dogs that were trailing us would cause problems and we would try to shoot them to chase them off. And it's really hard to kill a dog with one shot. And it makes a different noise. But they're conditioned to a pack of 40 dogs running around. Well, I've walked through suburban areas in Iraq with 40 dogs barking at me and nobody wakes up. I have blown doors and houses in Iraq, and two doors deep, there's still people sleeping. It's incredible.
Hey, yeah, human body, man, it'll learn how to survive and try to get some kind of normal condition in any environment. So you guys blew the door. Where were you at in the train?
Well, we didn't blow the door.
I'm sorry, that's right.
They went into it. They mechanically breached the door. I think they used a holy. They popped the door. It didn't go anywhere. Came across comms, hey, short room, which at the time, you know, that verbiage changes. That meant there was nowhere else to go. So I was on another door, so I popped that one. I just donkey kicked it, opened up to a small foyer. I went in there. There's two doors in that room with a small lantern and just a pilot slit, but we're all on nods. And this is a group. I was just the MSD guy to keep we didn't teach the Iraqis how to blow stuff and we didn't teach them glass. So it was kind of an accident that I was being number one going in, because we had trained these guys to the point where they trusted us and we trusted them enough to be safe enough to be the ones that actually did the clearance. Because for the first 3 months, they just watched us. It was hard to train those people. The first 50 dudes we got that got off the bus in their man dresses and flip flops, we told them to do 10 push-ups. 40 of them quit. They just quit. They wouldn't even get down and do a single push-up. They just thought we were going to hand them money.
Remarkable.
I got in there and the train didn't split. And Clark had been the lead breacher in that other room. So he had to come all the way out of the other room that he just cleared through. It wasn't too far of a distance, but he came through and he saw that I wasn't going because I had another door and train needed to split. We needed to go SIMO on the doors because they were like right next to each other on different walls. he came back in and he popped his head in the door and he saw what was going on. And he's the one that got the thing rolling again. He came up, we gave a barrel wave. We both just front kicked our doors. They were flimsy little doors. Mine was a right corner fed room. My door bounced off the right wall. The right wall was clear. I took a left-hand turn and they just started shooting at me. I lost my rifle. I was my finger was in the trigger well and I was off and I was off safe and they still beat me.
How many were in there?
Four.
Can you kind of describe the setup of the room with it, what you walked into?
Yeah, it's a 12 by 12. Well, we'll call it a square room. Maybe the dimensions might be a little bit different. Square with small. And the only thing in the room was these four dudes in bedrolls. And if you read my citations, it's amazing that 20 people can see the same thing and see something totally different.
Yeah.
Was there a point in time that when those rounds started hitting, because you got shot 27 times, 11 in the armor, 16 in the body, were the first ones the most painful or the last ones?
I can't answer that because I can't separate it. It's all the same pain.
Because they were hitting you while you were on the ground too, right?
When I got into the room, I'm telling you, I came off my pivot foot, and that's when they started hitting me. And I mean, everything just stopped. I've had this thing happen to me ever since I was a kid. In very high stress situations where death would be imminent or could be imminent, time slows down for me. And that's what happened in this room. I had full conversations with myself. Literally from the time I dropped my right foot in that room to the time I hit the ground to the first guy that I killed, might've been 5 seconds. It seemed like minutes to me. I got in that room. I started getting hit. I was like, am I getting hit? My legs are coming out from underneath me at this point. I dropped my rifle because it fucking hurt so bad. I transitioned to my pistol, which a lot of guys don't wear this stuff like I do. I wear a drop holster. It's uncomfortable to run around with, but that's where it's comfortable for me. And I transitioned to my pistol as my legs were coming out from underneath me, having a conversation with myself. I mean, I literally asked myself, am I getting shot?
What'd you say?
I had to answer that question because it just felt like people beating the hell out of me with sledgehammers. But all this was automatic. You know, the rifle, I lost it. Later found out that I walked around with that thing hanging around my neck. I thought the sling got shot off. When I transitioned to my pistol, I killed the dude down the left wall as I was falling towards him, having this conversation with myself in this matrix-like scenario. I mean, I was seeing vapor trails off of bullets. I was watching bullets spin. I was watching them impact. I put five or six rounds into the dude down the left wall that was shooting at me with a fucking M4 with my pistol. And I landed right next to him. I watched him die. I watched the life leave his eyes. I knew he was dead. It was 4 months for me to figure out that this next event happened. A dude stood up and he pulled the pin on the grenade and he was running out of the room. He was going to blow himself up in the train out in the hallway, out in the foyer. I won't say his last name, but he's still in. He's got a pretty good business going for medical stuff. But he was the platoon chief that was turning over with me. And he raked the window to see what was going on in the room. And he saw me shoot the dude. But nobody saw me go in the room but Iraqis, our Iraqi scouts. He saw the guy get shot in the head. He didn't know where it came from. He saw the guy drop the grenade, blow up. And he caught a bunch of frag in his face from the window. All the glass that blew in his face. I guess at that point, I'm unconscious. So you got to push back a little bit. So Clark, who breached the initial room, went in the other room, caught a round in the back of the neck. It popped his one of those, what is that in your neck?
The artery.
It just sliced it. That
round went through the wall and hit him?
No.
Or was there somebody in the room with him?
No, it went through both doorways.
Yeah, okay.
All right, well, then what happened?
Well, they tried to get in the room when I was unconscious from the grenade blast. And they came up over comms to find out status. I was unconscious. and they couldn't get in the room because there was still two dudes in there with AKs sawing out the doors, you know. So they decided to fall back, and they were going to use, we had a Spectre gunship.
Somebody called them in?
Yeah, they had it prepped. They were just trying to fulfill all the requirements, which they couldn't fulfill because they didn't have full head count. They were down, I think they were down five. Myself, three scouts had gotten to the back of the house, Clark. We had one scout that was killed trying to follow me in the room.
Take it down, buddy.
My number two guy got shot in the chest, and his body armor saved him. It just pushed him back out of the room, just knocked him out of the room. And the number three guy followed for some reason and died in the doorway. So anybody that had any sense when they came in thought that that was the number one guy, and thought he just got killed in the doorway. But after they decided that they couldn't get in there and nobody was responding on comms, they pulled back to minimum safe distance to whatever they were going to drop, and they were trying to get the head count. But as they were falling back, I woke up, and that's where I thought I was I was going to play possum. Because I woke up, and there was two guys on the other side of the room shooting AKs over top of me through the window at the guys that were leaving. And I re-engaged them, and I ran a magazine dry and went and did a magazine change. And I'm still on my left side against the first dude I killed by the window. And I got those rounds off, I think, because I thought I was dead, because I've got holes in me that make me believe that when I was unconscious, they stuck the pistol in my body armor and shot a couple rounds in my back, and I got a couple rounds in my ass, which I got a funny story about. I just got a bullet I got shot in the ass with.
Oh, really?
Traveled over my head all the way through my stomach, and I had something in my stomach, and I had some of our boys cut it out for me. I got a pretty funny video of it. But I got shot in the ass with a 9mm, traveled over my head, migrated all the way to my stomach, and now I'm wearing it around my neck.
Of course you are.
So I ran that magazine dry, did the magazine change. They realized I was still alive, and they re-engaged me, which is pretty good, I guess, because one of the guys outside, he took a round to the arm. So I drew their attention, and here's another crazy part. A round went through its foot of the magazine, blew the hand grips off the magazine, off the pistol. I could feel the springs in the palms of my hands, and I cleared the malfunction, and I killed those two dudes.
That's amazing, brother.
You should get free cigs for life.
So I got up on my hands and knees after I shot everybody a couple more times and changed my that's a magazine change. Yeah, so that's a terrible count. It took me, 30 rounds to kill four dudes.
I don't think anybody's going to give you a hard time for that, buddy.
That's kind of the glass is half full way of looking at that, brother. I'd when it comes to immediate action drills and we're doing a full rattle battle, that was, like you said, man, you have the ability to slow down time.
And I'm a terrible pistol shot.
Goddamn, I am too.
It's a good thing you got a lot of rounds.
You've been better off beating them dudes to death with that pistol instead of shooting it at them.
Oh God, I was working on that. After a minute, I was pretty angry.
God, I bet. So you're making so you're on your hands and knees, crawling out, making your way to the door.
Yeah. So after all that stuff went away, and that was another crazy thing. I had complete auditory exclusion. Mm-hmm. I didn't hear any of that. Hundreds of rounds were fired in that room. Hundreds. I get up on my hands and knees, and I asked for status in the house. And one of those three Iraqi scouts came back in, and he told me what was going on. He told me that Clark was dead. He, he gave me a Hutch report. I think they call it a slant now. You date yourself when you start coming up with stuff like that. Right. Hutch report. But that Hutch report is hostages, unknowns.
Tangos.
What are the tangos?
Seals. Hostages, unknowns, tangos and seals, right?
Seals, as the seals. Tangos are the terrorists. And he gave that to me, let me know Clark was dead. I got up, I started walking around the house. I put him on the front door. I told him, don't let anybody come to that front door. Just kill him if anybody comes to that front door. And I got back, I found Clark, and that's where the women and children were. Clark was gone with a big smile on his face, like always. And the women and children were screaming, and I got them to quiet down. I got deeper in the house. I found my other two scouts, and they were holding on to detainees. I checked the flex cuffs on those, left one there, brought one out to watch the women and children, and then I tried to make comms. And that's when I found out that my radio was destroyed. I had to take Clark's radio off of him. And I changed out the comms. I went back into the other room, and I sat in a different place than where I had been in the gunfight. And I don't think the guys understood that I had been up walking around by the time they got there. So I switched out the radios, and I called them in. And Jimbo, I can't say his last name because he's still active duty, but that's the best SEAL I've ever met. He's pretty good at everything. So I got a hold of those guys, called them back up, deconflicted the front door, let the guy know that, hey, don't shoot them. They're coming in. And they came in. And I knew I'd been shot, but I didn't know. I didn't think I was bad until I saw the guys look at me. When I saw them look at me, you know that holy shit look, right? And that's what I did. Like all of them. Not just like one or two of them. It was like all of them. Holy shit. Look at that.
Hey, bro, man, you want to sit down?
Oh, shit, dude. They didn't actually, like I said, they didn't realize that I was in a different spot. They didn't know that I'd been up walking around. Where I had been laying, they said there was like a silhouette of bullet holes up against the wall.
Sure, yeah.
Like Pulp Fiction. 27 rounds hit. You got hit by 27 rounds, but how many went through?
16 in the body.
Stung you? Man.
Well, it's 16 to the body and 11 to the body armor. So I had one that went clean through my left thigh. I had one that went through clean through my scrotum, separated my best efforts. Didn't break anything. One of my nuts is a little square. I had one go in my lower right leg, and it ran all the way up my and it came out my upper right thigh. They're pretty amazed at that one because it didn't
hit the femoral,
hit the femur, or didn't pop the femoral. It should have. 99.9% of the time, that would have popped the femoral. And that's an AK-47 round inside of 10 feet. They got hit in the stomach right up underneath my body. That went through my bladder. I had a stent in my bladder. It went to my, I lost about a foot of intestine. I had a colostomy bag for about a year. It went through my rectum. Four rounds in my upper left arm. My bicep didn't hit bone. My left thumb was almost amputated at the middle joint. I had three in my upper right arm. I had two go through my scapula, shatter my scapula. I had a pretty nasty exit wound out of my right armpit. Got shot twice in the ass. And quite honestly, the ones that hit the body armor hurt worse. I broke ribs. I had a contusion on my right lung. When I called the guys in and they took my body armor off, they found the two bullet holes in my back. And when I actually called them up, I told them they had to hurry up because I couldn't breathe. And I thought I had a sucking chest wound. But luckily, I didn't.
Man, bro, you just had a rough day.
Character building day.
That was easy.
Man, I tell you what, Mojo and I were up at group one time after we had gotten, all of us had gotten back, and your body armor was in there. Remember, it was in that box in Skipper's, in his office?
Yeah, that was after a ceremony.
Yeah. God dang, man.
Which I don't know if you remember that or not, but I was at your ceremony when you came back in.
Yeah. They made me do that. I didn't want to do that.
That was going to be one of my next questions. What was it like on the return once you got back in? You know, because it took you two years after that night to get back up on step?
I mean, it depends on how you look at it. I got all the way to suicidal. I mean, you can apply that to that. I would say the most significant part of my life was working at the Care Coalition and watching all the things and that people use for treatment and all the... I mean, healthcare is a fucking train wreck right now.
That was one thing I always so admired about you, but I couldn't believe it because for all the listeners out there, Mike was my Care Coalition provider when I got pulled out of country.
I was a way better social worker than I was a SEAL.
Well, I couldn't, man, because you were, honestly, every time we would talk or every time we were together, you were always concerned about me and how I was doing, which was, I was like, buddy, I was like, you got shot what are you talking about? I couldn't believe you felt sorry for me. And I'm sitting there looking at you. I'm like, bro, I cannot believe.
Yeah, I mean, you couldn't have wound up in a better place being an advocate for guys who go through some hard times, because you've went through the mere fact that you had to go through all that and stood back up and go back in. That's not something that you have to take every single day, man. That's something you can take. Guys see that, and then you giving back, and I'm still an operational frogman. That's amazing, man. That's if you're searching for any reason why God kept you around, it's to motivate anybody and everybody underneath you. Because there's not too many people walking around have been shot that many times that have a smile on their face.
I mean, that's cool for me, because everybody else is trying to prove something. I literally, that event gave me, I will show all my vulnerabilities. I've had a couple of people call me pussies. I just kind of laugh at them.
Yeah, what exactly?
But you guys healed me. That job healed me. It was hard. It got to the point where I couldn't do it anymore. It's hard being around trauma all the time. Ah. But I'm actually drawn to it. The people I'm drawn to are the ones that have suffered the most and kind of figured it out. You can't really say figured it out, because it's like an ongoing process. It changes. It's ideas change, you know.
I tell you what, when I was hanging around you, I had no problems. No matter what I was going, I was like, man, you know, hell, I'm gonna bitch and complain standing next to a guy that has been through everything you've been through, and you're sitting there shouldering all my problems as well as your own with a smile on your face. You got a gift, my friend.
Yeah, I drew strength from everybody else too. I mean. Look at guys like Taylor Morris. Dude's a quad amp. I'm sure that guy has bad days. I've never seen one.
All right.
Or Dan Knossen.
Yeah.
That guy, dude, he is a force of nature. I mean, and people can look at him and all they can see is that he's a double amputee above the knee.
Mm-hmm.
They have no idea what other shit he deals with. They can't even comprehend it.
Well, that's the best part about having the teams and everybody around us, man. And you see the guys like yourself that say you're not exceptional, but the thing that you went through and the trauma that you had to experience was. So that's how you get identified as somebody who can help others, just by the reality of you going through it. Because we're all basically the same. It's how much time and effort you put into honing in all your skills and trying to experience life. If you look at it, there are no good and bad times. It's just the times and how well-trained you are for them and when they show up. And stepping into that, it molds you. It's that character builder, man. You can't get it without going through the tribulation, the hard times. It teaches you what you can appreciate. And just by sticking around and passing that down to all of us going through it, it creates that circle, man. It's like, I don't have to worry about my problems. I'm going to worry about yours.
Yeah, it makes it all right, you know? Makes it all right. Well, but we also got to be careful too, not to trauma to different people is different things. You know, you can't really put that on a scale of yours is worse than mine, because that was something that I saw. I mean, you've even said it in this conversation. Your trauma and your emotions, you can't let them be diminished because somebody else has got a worse deal. But there does have to come a point that if you're allowing yourself to be a victim for too long, everybody always says never quit. Shit, I've quit a lot of shit. I just went back to it later on.
So you didn't really quit, you just kind of postponed it for a second or two.
I say the same thing, man. Like, we say never quit all the time because all the situations we're in are tough, and you're like, man, I should probably quit. This is ridiculous. But that's why we say that, and then the lessons come through that. It's gonna be tough, and then the rewards come in the beginning or on the back end or through the whole thing. And the more willingness you put out to stand in those situations, sharpen you. We're all blades, and everybody around you is a stone. They're either going to sharpen you, polish you, or dull you out.
That's a fact right there.
Yeah, and it's kind of one of those deals when you go in there and you get sharpened up by the situation, and then you go out and you explain it and how you went through it, man, and that kind of polishes everything around you so you can see it when it's coming back in. And also knowing that everything you come into contact with on the way up, man, if it can't do what that did to you, then you shouldn't have to worry about it. It's like a level of pain and experience and trauma that you survived, and that's what you're capable of handling, and then everything else falls underneath it. I mean, we all have that freak out point. And when everything falls apart, we start to freak out. And then we have the point to where everything's fine and we're calm. The trick is putting the distance between the two of those. And the only way you can do that is through life experiences. And you do that remarkably well, brother.
Oh, I mean, lots of people do. I mean, we have, everybody's trying to figure out how to build resiliency, and they underestimate the resiliency they have because they see shit around them all the time. They're like, there's no way. They see a situation. They're like, there's no way I could do that like that person did. No, that person did it because they had to.
Yeah.
And you know what? It's going to go one of two ways. It's either going to break you or it will make you stronger. Shit, we're humans. We don't even know why we do the things we do. Self-awareness doesn't come to everybody.
No, it doesn't. So how are you doing? I mean, after all of this, I know it's been 12 years now. How's Mike doing now?
I'm having fun. I feel joy. I'm getting better at getting rid of things in my life that don't serve me. I think more than anything else that I've never done before, I'm doing stuff for myself as opposed to doing it for everybody else around me.
Mm-hmm. It's good to start there.
No, we spend the first part of it kind of figuring that all out. I mean, the first 40 years of it, you're trying to figure out the man that you're not. Mm-hmm. After you obtain that, then you kind of start over through the halfway point and push in a different direction, just taking all that knowledge with you.
Well, shit, I didn't discover my ignorance until about 5-6 years ago.
I mean, we don't have any idea if tomorrow's going to show up or not. You just don't. So imagine your life is like a video game that you get to start over every morning. Only thing is you get to keep all your experiences and all your tools that you had the previous day. And then you wake up in the morning and try and live that one out and go further than you did the day before. Learn a little bit more. And then go to bed and hit the reset button and start over. Fresh day.
Probably one of the biggest problems that I've had in my life was my childhood. And it's funny how that kind of sneaks up on you. But when you start to understand that and have the awareness of how you were brought up, you can almost predict your behaviors. Kind of figure out why you do things you do. I mean, I look at society now, it's so mindless. It's a bunch of lemmings. It's so easy to see. So nice not watching TV. I'm so much happier. To get away from all that programming and everything that's going on nowadays.
Oh, well, it makes you feel like there's something always bad going on all the time. That's what that 24-hour cycle in reality is. Just most of that stuff doesn't even have to do with where you're at. I mean, you're talking about people losing, like the younger generation kind of losing their identities. They're not claiming to be anything. Basically, yeah. Autonomous is AI, is that phone that they're on. It doesn't really have a personality or anything like that. It just exists. And the only reason it exists is because of us. The identities are unique in what and who you are. And that's what life's supposed to do, is show you that. If you don't want to be anything or be called anything, or it's just nothingness, really. Do you have a family history of military service? Did your mom and dad push this on you, or do you, brothers and sisters? Where did this all start?
Yeah, my father was a, what do they call those things? There's 53, the SEALers. He was a mechanic, a helicopter mechanic.
Oh, AE?
Yeah, but he was medically retired. I was about 12 years old, 11, 12 years old. He was medically retired with schizophrenia. You heard me say the SEAL teams are easy for me.
You said with schizophrenia?
Yeah, that event where I got all shut up was more traumatic to people around me than it was to me. That didn't even bother me.
Uh-huh.
I got lucky. I only had two bones hit. It was just a hindrance to me. It just slowed me down. I grew up in a very violent house. Yeah, he was medically retired with schizophrenia.
Damn.
You got any brothers or sisters?
Yeah. From the initial marriage, I got a brother. From the second marriage, my father's second marriage, they had a brother and a sister. One of my brother from that marriage was actually in the SEAL teams. He was a good SEAL, sniper, breacher, did a bunch of combat deployments. I think he was at two. My mother had two boys. One of those boys was went to the Coast Guard, and he was a safety swimmer. And the first duty station he took was out in Kodiak.
Oh. Whoa.
As a safety swimmer. Yeah, you know, that'd be hard for one of us. And the other one was in the Navy. I don't know what he did in the Navy. And so there's a bunch of military in the family. I got an extended family from a couple of divorces.
So what's up with your book, man? Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, the idea I'm trying to get across. Well, honestly, nobody would actually listen to me if I didn't get shot so many times.
Well, you did get shot that many times, so now everyone is listening. So what do you got to say?
Well, I'm grateful for it. It could have been a lot worse. I took 27 rounds. I know dudes that took one round and that aren't here or have way worse injuries than I ever had. That care coalition job was the most significant part of my life. I really liked that job.
Well, you were damn good at it. At least you were with me.
I can't even remember what question you just asked.
Oh, just about the book and how that's looking, what's going on with that?
Oh, yeah. So where we are right now is I actually had a pretty popular author that I fired because they were trying to steal from me. Terrible business out there. People will just try to rape you if you let them walk all over you. But I got rid of that co-author and my agent, so they kind of pushed it back. So I'm working with a different co-author. I think we got a pretty good product. I just sent my manuscript to the publisher to see what their suggestions are and their feedback. So I'm getting ready to get through that part, and then I'll send it to the DOD for the approval process like Marcus did.
Yep.
And I already talked to WARCOM. I think they're going to help, they'll help me out. Usually there's a Pentagon, like, okay, where's the mothership, where this dude were? It's going to go to WARCOM, so it's going to go faster. And then I'm hoping to be ready for pre-sale here shortly. Maybe inside of the next 2 months.
Oh, sweet. So around the holidays. Because we'll definitely push it and help you out here in any way we can. What? How else can people follow you or find you or get any information, pearls of wisdom from you?
I haven't really set up any of that. My social media is a mess, but I am on social media. I haven't set up anything professional. It's just random crap that I throw on there that people might find interesting. My name is Mike Day. I'll friend you on Facebook or Instagram, and when I have information that's worth passing, I'll pass it.
Well, you got a life full of it, brother. I mean, and this is kind of how, just like you had to get your battle rhythm when you were in the teams, you got hurt, you had to redo that. This is the same thing. I mean, the best part about having WARCOM, and I mean, that's, that's the head shed, that's the family. They watch, when you allow them to watch out for you, they do. Man, it was so beneficial. Well, my whole life, anytime I ever did anything, it was always routed through them. So any of the guys who are getting into that right now, that's the first thing I tell them, man, is always use the community to help you, not try and get away from it. And any of the guys that say they did all this without the community are the ones that usually...
No, the SEAL teams were such an important part of my life. I mean, the guys don't know it. I mean, I guess I can say here, since it's going to be in the book, but 3 months before I took the job, going back to teach the military free fall, and then later, because of prior injuries in that gunfight, I had to leave because I had 3 cutaways. Because I couldn't, because my arm wouldn't work. Ripped my pec off, my pec completely ripped off. I had a slap tear from a reserve parachute deployment at terminal. It just popped my pec out of my arm. So after that happened, I went back to teaching CQC in South, which was interesting. That's close quarters combat. That's how we clear houses. And SALC is Special Operations Urban Combat, how we move through cities and stuff. And it was kind of ironic that I'm teaching guys the same TTPs, the training, the tactics that I used when I was in the SEAL teams active, and what we're using now to counter what happened to me. So it was interesting. And those guys don't know how much they actually helped me when I came back to be able to. I was literally suicidal 3 months prior. Then I started jumping out of airplanes, and I went back to what got me hurt. It was great. And the fact that I can still do it is amazing. I was turning 14, 15-hour days with body armor on, doing 10, 12 miles. And shit, I'm 48 years old.
That was the best thing is after the injuries, when you get back around the guys, and it just and eventually you work your way back to the place where you kind of got hurt, and you work your way through it. You revisit it, and especially when you got your guys with you. Because a lot of times you feel alone when you go through a situation like that, especially on the back end, if no one else got hurt in the same situation. But when you go back in it with your guys and you start going back to your routine, it does. It kind of reconstitutes that whole memory in your head as a back to a learning
environment as something that was like a punishment.
Yeah, not quite getting back on the horse. I mean, I'd like to be number one going through a door again, but like a real one.
That's time for the next generation.
You always question it.
Remember when our wars kicked off, the Vietnam guys like, hey, we're coming in, man. We're going to... We got this one.
Well, see, that's another way to build resilience. And I think I even did it myself, but I recognize guys in the SEAL teams. They say, well, I'm not scared to do this. And I'm like, oh, you know, I think that's bullshit. That's what I think makes SOF operators different, or just people in general that have the ability to know that something scares them and they just do it anyway. It doesn't lock them up. So fear's either going to lock you up or it's going to, you know, it's going to tighten you up. I'm not saying going out and do ridiculous shit every day, but it's good to do stuff that scares you, because if it scares you, that means it's just a tiny bit past what your comfort level is. And that's how you build resilience. You just get out of your comfort level a little bit.
Absolutely.
If your normal life is sitting around on the couch and playing video games, eating bonbons, then that could just be a walk. You know, you don't have to beat the hell out of yourself to build resilience. You just have to be aware enough to know where you're, comfort level is, and just push it a little bit.
Yeah, and it leads to that. I mean, we don't start with just that major thing. That's just one you hear about. Everyone's, you got to start the path kind of one step at a time. And just like you said, man, you show us what you're afraid of, and we'll show you what you're made of. It's the fear is the fuel for your willpower. And if you see something that gives you the heebie-jeebies, you're looking at it, just means you're not trained for it. You start stepping into it, just step piece by piece, inch by inch, eventually you're the one that becomes proficient at it. And then people are looking at you going, hey, man, how'd you learn how to do that? And, well, I just kind of did the same thing you're doing right now. I showed up and watched the guy ahead of me and picked it up.
That's probably the most important thing to do right there is what you just said, is show up.
Yep. Yeah, show up. People, you know, how do you get respect? How do you get to where? All right, first step, kind of always leave this out, is just show up. If you see something you want to do and it gives you to show up around the people that are doing it, and on time, right? Show up on time. Start with that. That's how you get respect from people, is if you just show up on time. And then you'll start to integrate into it. Not all at once, but step by step. And then you just kind of pick up the little tidbits. I mean, by default, if you're not the best person in the room and you're around a bunch of people who are good at it, you just pick up the tidbits.
I also look at that more general. I mean, just to me, showing up just means, you know, arrive on the scene. Be aware enough to know what has to be worked on. That alone right there is something that a lot of people won't ever get to, because everything's always bad happening to them. You know, quite honestly, it's easier to say everything's your fault. Everything that's a problem in your life is your fault, because if you want to blame somebody else, that means you're a victim and you're waiting for that person or the perpetrator to come fix it. And that's not going to happen.
No, it's not.
Thanks, man. Yeah, we'll wrap it up now. Sure appreciate you telling your story. I mean, it's an emotional one. Thanks for getting through it with us and sharing all that. We love you.
Love you guys, too.
Yeah, no matter, hey, that tough road you had, hoe, but always know that just sheer fact that you went through that and made it through it, that you help people just by standing around them. I mean, you may not look at it like a big deal, but the rest of us do. Me, Mojo, and all the team guys, when we speak of your name, is with a reverence, man, because you took all that for us, and then you got back up. Don't look at it like you went through it, man. You took it for us, took that pain, and it's something. It's what guys, the younger guys coming in after us, they hear those stories. I mean, even if you don't tell them, the guys around you do. Thanks again, brother, for everything.
Be good. Get out there and drink a beer and finish that yard.
Yep.
Well, I mean, you're lucky you didn't die in that helicopter crash.
Eh, whatever.
Yeah, we've all had some.
Marcus likes to roll down hills, and he didn't die.
There are times I think I might have.
I had three of us had to get together, go on tour, and go, don't do this. But if you do, if you find yourself in this situation, you'll end up like us. Positive mental attitude. Never quit.
Well, I'll probably see you guys here in the next couple months. I'll probably be driving through Texas here soon.
Come on.
Well, come on. We got a room for you. Yeah, we got a room. Doors open.
All right, man. Great hearing from you guys. Thanks for having me on.
Yep. Out.
Later.
Later, bro. You know, ever since I've known Mike, he's always, his heart's as big around his estate. Anything and everything he's been through, he cares more about the well-being of everyone around him than he does himself, which is remarkable, but damn, man, it can be sad too, because sometimes when you shoulder that weight,
it just eats you up from the inside, but he does well.
Like the long suffering, puts himself in them crazy situations just so he can have the just the advice and the moral clarity to relate and to exist in that all the time. And it takes a special type of person. And what you've been through, brother man, don't ever discount that. I know you said it just another day. I don't know where you came from.
He's one of those guys that, you know, you ever hear about those guys like, man, I just bad luck follows me around. It may be him.
That's the guy.
I'm glad he shared that with us too, because I mean, he got emotional while he was talking to us, and it's been 2007 since this happened.
Well, man, you can think about it when we're in. 12
years ago, and it still gets into his guts.
You think about it differently when you're out now. Now we're just buddies. It's not. There's that mindset when you're in, and that happens. That's like a qual. Man, she took that, and that motivates you and drives you. And then when you get out and you get the family and all that, then you realize something like that happened to him. Then you understand that the bad part of it.
Yeah.
I don't know if that makes sense, but it's kind of like, you see it differently. So, brother, man, just keep your head up, bro. And always know that people look to you as kind of that pillar of motivation of what the human condition can take, physically and mentally. So don't ever, I know you don't like to give advice, or you really don't have to.
Just be you.
With words, yeah, man. You just be you.
Thanks, brother. We love you.
We're out. If you want to be the first one to know when we drop a new episode, then you need to make sure you subscribe to the podcast. You can press the purple subscribe button on Apple Podcasts or any other major podcast player to be notified the moment we release a new episode. The show is available on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, and pretty much any other podcast player. We've got a ton of great episodes and had some incredible guests along the way, including J.J. Watt, David Goggins, and LaDamian Washington.
If you're already following us on Facebook and Instagram, you know we keep our followers up to date with gear, sales, guests, events, and tons of other stuff you're not going to get anywhere else. If you aren't following us yet, you're missing out. You want to join this community, then you can follow us right now at @team_neverquit. You can keep up with all that Marcus has got going on at Marcus Luttrell, Morgan at Mojo Luttrell, and me at Andrew Brockenbush on Instagram. And thank you guys again for tuning in every week. Means everything to us. We love doing it. Love having you guys listening.
Andrew, Mojo, great show, man. Mikey, thank you again for coming on and sharing that. Truly, it's something, brother. I know some days it's going to be harder than others, but remember, we don't have bad days. We just have hard ones, and we're well-trained for them. So keep charging forward, man. To everybody who keeps bringing us back, we can't thank you enough. If you're new to the team, welcome to it. All of our guests and all of our team members, man, you guys are amazing. All of your stories, it truly is something that propels each and every one of us through life. I regularly read and listen and watch what you guys put out there, and it's awe-inspiring. We're kind of each unique in our own battlefield, and the fact that you guys are willing to write that in and share those hard stories, man, just let you know that we're all kind of going through this together. So thank you guys again for doing that. God bless you. I'm out.